the devil's advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Happier Happy Hour, the Friday Eve edition. We'll take your phone calls, most of you, at 844-967-2789. Don, before we move on, and I know you're desperate to talk about the new subpoenas.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to talk about Robin Voss's marital status and make
do we have to
get it right here.
We want to be clear? All right. Let's get all the facts out for the people who care about Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's marital status.
According to the Associated Press, Voss's first two marriages ended in divorce. Under the terms of his second divorce, which was finalized in 2017, his ex-wife Samantha was barred from speaking with anyone about their marriage or the grounds for the divorce. The separation agreement...
Forever? I mean, usually there's a sunset on these. I mean, really? Really?
Well, give her a call. See if she's feeling talkative. It's been a
here
decade.
She might be single.
The separation agreement made in 2012, as Voss was preparing to run for speaker, prohibited her from changing her marital status on Facebook until after the election.
Wow, that's just so strange.
A little bit more. Actually, this AP being quoted by our friends, One Wisconsin Now, where Scott Ross used to work. Records also revealed that Voss's I can't even say the word right now. I'm laughing because I'm reading ahead. His Voss's desire for privacy extends to his conduct of the public business in the state legislature. And then Scott Ross and his crew went on to talk about the gerrymandering. And that was long before this recent open records lawsuit where the judge implored him under contempt findings to stop deleting the emails.
Yes, you can no longer do that. How many times have the Republicans been told that?
Now, the third wife of Robin Voss, Michelle Lichkins, was also married, apparently, when they met. I don't know precisely when the first time they met, you know, in the biblical way. But they were both married to other people, and they served in the same caucus. And now they're very close. I saw the lovely Mrs. Voss at a function in Milwaukee a couple years ago now. She was quite nice, to me at least. No, she was. We were at the Potawatomi Milwaukee Press Club, some event, and Mrs. Voss, Robin crossed the hallway to shake my hand, you know, friend of the devil style and all that. I wonder if Paul Nealon would.
You never know.
Lovely lady. Hey, baby, you're all right. You must have been something before electricity, huh?
No, I know why lions eat their young. 844-967-2789. While intriguing, as the marital status of the Assembly Speaker of Wisconsin, maybe to some, I don't give a damn how many times he's been married, who he's sleeping with, or any of that. So let's move on to more pressing matters.
That's why I took Earl as my wingman that night.
Yeah. Come on, man. Okay, so we have the J6 has now subpoenaed the five Republican congressional members.
Count them.
Rudy.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The number of
the fraudulent five. What? See. Okay. We got McCarthy, Mo Brooks, Andy Biggs, Scott Perry, and Jim Jordan. Well, the Washington Post. They line up some Paul Waldman and Greg Sargent. You know why these guys? And here's just a few paragraphs as to the background of these players.
Before you read in, and I haven't actually read the article, so I'm not aware of what it may say. But this is like a 4 and a 1. You've got 4 active participants, and then you got one guy you're trying to get to tell on the others. And the other guy, I'd point out, Mo Brooks, who was a participant. He was the, you know, kick ass and break stuff guy at the Capitol Elise, gave the speech. I think he had the yellow windbreaker with the bulletproof vest underneath.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Tried to claim he was just there doing his congressional duties at the bequest of his president. But since that point, Trump's turned on the man. And if any of these people is going to turn on Trump, watch Mo Brooks. And Kevin McCarthy, again, I don't think he was the active participant, as we've talked about. You know, maybe the crowd feels more strongly, or what precisely Trump said allegedly or reportedly to him. But I just think they're just trying to turn up the heat on the future speaker question mark.
Perhaps they're just trying to, you know, find out information as to the coup attempt and who was involved. So here's the background, Brooks, as laid out by the Washington Post. When you say it, when you put it in those terms, Cody, it sounds like it's a political witch hunt. And I don't believe that's at all what it is. And that's what the Republicans are saying it is.
You mean for McCarthy or the other? Because I think they should have maybe treated these subpoenas separately if you didn't want, you know, aspersions cast your way. And obviously, they've already had these deliberations. They've already come to this conclusion. No,
the bipartisan committee has come to this conclusion that they want to talk to these Republicans, that they have information. Yes.
Well, we're waiting.
So what's your point? I guess when you say that you think that for some reason because of
McCarthy
wants to run for Speaker of the House.
I don't think he was an active participant.
Doesn't matter. I mean, he has insight into Trump's
mindset.
But
I'm not clear that he has complicitness with the coup attempt, per se.
Well, great. He should have no problem then communicating what he heard to his fellow members of the party.
Yeah, but I think I think the other four guys were more than willing to burn down democracy. And Kevin McCarthy is just a coward.
But if you're a coward covering for other people that want to burn down democracy, that kind of makes you in line with those that want to burn down democracy. If you have 10 people sitting at a table with one Nazi, you got 11 Nazis, right?
So
here's what Brooks said. Brooks appeared.
I'm going to ask you that the next time you dine with Paul Nealon.
Brooks appeared with Trump at the rally near the White House. Which he incited his supporters to head to the Capitol, give a fiery speech telling the crowd to do what it takes to go after weak-kneed Republicans in Congress to save the country. What did Trump say to Brooks about what he had hoped the mob would do? Perry was deeply involved in strategizing with Trump aides on how to overturn the election in the weeks before before January 6th. Texts with Meadows showed Perry urging the White House to enlist the American national security apparatus in that effort. What did Trump or others in the White House say in response? Jim Jordan, also participated in White House meetings planning how to overturn the election, and he has admitted speaking with Trump on multiple times January 6th. What did Trump say about what he hoped the gathering rally might accomplish? The committee earlier wrote to Biggs that it had information indicating he participated in White House planning sessions for January 6th and sought to convince state legislators that the election was stolen and persuade them to help overturn it. McCarthy's testimony might be most important of all. The subpoena of McCarthy suggests the committee is bearing down hard on the question of whether Trump came to see the violence as it unfolded as a weapon that could help carry out the procedural coup he'd been attempting for weeks. So this is pretty groundbreaking, right? This is not something that happens all the time. And, of course, they're all going to push back on it. Some reporting.
Well, yeah, if I'm an insurrectionist traitor to my country and democracy, I'm certainly not going to willingly come testify for the J6 committee and say, you got me, I did it.
But this is also part of you are part of this. Congress, right? These are your peers, and this is what they do. And how are you going to turn them down? Here at the Raw story, Nicole Wallace, MSNBC, interviewed former federal prosecutor, impeachment counsel Daniel Goldman. Wallace noted, so the only response from these five Republicans, they're all men, congressmen, has been to call the probe itself illegitimate. The problem with that is it's a talking point, I suppose, but it's not a legitimate argument, if you will. And the investigation itself has been before countless judges now who have deemed it completely legitimate. Where do they go other than a talking point objection, she asked. Goldman replied, they don't have anywhere else to go. It's like officer and a gentleman. They have their own right-wing ecosphere, which will play that up, but it is completely baseless, and there are a couple of components to this, he explained. First of all, a number of judges have found that this is a lawfully and duly authorized committee, and so their subpoenas are valid, so that argument is out the window. And I think that's a great point. You can say it all you want. It's one thing to say something stupid to the cameras, but when it comes to enforcing a subpoena, you're going to lose that argument.
Yeah, but can you delay the process beyond the midterm elections, which is their only goal? Because they'll just end the J6 investigation and any reports thereof. Whatever has not been presented to the public before the election, well, assuming the red wave is real, as CJ would tell us, then there won't be a J6 committee after the election, at least not after January 3rd.
Goldman goes on to write, think about this. First of all, it's pretty remarkable that you would have five, and there's actually more, congressmen who refuse to voluntarily give information to another committee of their own body. But it is even more ridiculous for them to defy subpoenas from their own body. They are undermining their own authority going forward by defying these subpoenas. He goes on to say, and we know they made a lot of threats, including to Congressman Swalwell, about how they're going to investigate all the Democrats if they're given subpoenas. One, first of all, I say bring it on. There's a lot more bluster and puffery from the Republican side than there is actual substance. When it gets to the substance, they don't have anywhere to go because it's all bogus. But two is that, how are you going to enforce subpoenas if you have just defied them? So, yeah, let's say the red wave does happen, Crudy. They defy these subpoenas. How the hell are they going to go to anybody like Swalwell and say, well, now we're going to subpoena you for X, Y, or Z? It undermines their argument. They're losing. Now, can they delay?
I mean, perhaps. Republicans are worried about inconsistencies in their argument. See Merrick Garland and Amy Coney Barrett.
So we just ignore them, let it go on, not comment on it, not bring to light the hypocrisies of them. Of course we have to do that. That's the point.
I don't think from a timing perspective it will be a successful attempt.
It's absolutely irrelevant because the J6 committee already has the information that they're asking these guys about.
These subpoenas. Only two.
Because I'm going to tell you why. Because they want to put it into a perspective. Hey, I got this text from you to you, and it sounds really bad, like you want to blow up the world. Would you like to come in and clarify that? That information is already there. They're not coming in to seek new information. You know, they're coming in to say, yes, you're damn right, I ordered the code red. That's not going to happen. They already have all the information that they need.
So if you think there are four of five of these Republicans subpoenaed, four of these congresspeople, I think the implication is they were complicit in the crimes of the January 6th. I have yet to hear anyone make those same sort of accusations against the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy. So I guess the only thing I would point out is the strategery of laying five subpoenas. It's like bringing in the usual suspects. You got four people that are guilty as hell, and then you get dragged into it, right? And if you're Kevin McCarthy, aren't you going to want to separate yourself from the actual active criminal part of your caucus? I mean, maybe you could pressure McCarthy to actually testify. That's my only point. The rest, they're not going to because they're criminally complicit.
The New York Times also points out some of the pushback in just a couple paragraphs here, and we'll get to your calls, 844-967-2789. The so-called speech or debate clause of the Constitution, intended to protect the independence of the legislative branch, says that senators and representatives, quote, shall not be questioned in any other place about any speech or debate in either chamber. It has been broadly interpreted over to cover the legislative actions, not just words. On its face, however, that clause is limited to questioning them in quote-unquote other places, like courtrooms. There is also precedent for the House to subpoena its own members. In a narrow context, the House Ethics Committee has authority under the chamber's rules to subpoena members for testimony or documents, and members are required to comply with the House Ethics Committee. This is a legitimate committee. Multiple judges have supported and upheld their right to exist, their legitimacy, and to enforce these subpoenas. They can delay all they want, and I fully expect that they will do so, but this is a strong and bold move, a positive move forward.
You know, you would think these Republicans would see these subpoenas as viable at conception. Come back with us. Your calls could be next. 844-967-2789.
How could your wife think there's a 1% chance you were with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow?
If I was married to somebody and that was revealed to be true, where's any level of love there?
We have seen a small increase in deaths, which is a good thing.
I got nowhere else to go!